Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the websites classicalworks.com and onthisday.com. Question number one, what is the term for a direction to play music lively and fast? Is that term adagio, or is it allegro, or is it legato, or is it answer D, drone? And question number two, it was on this day back in 1973 that a popular singer was killed in a plane crash on his way to Sherman, Texas for a concert. Five others were also killed in that accident. Who was the singer? Hint, he was known for such songs as Big Bad Leroy Brown, Operator, and Time in a Bottle. So who was that singer who died in a plane crash in 1973 on this day? Was it A, Ronnie Van Zant? Was it B, Ricky Nelson? Was it C, Jim Croce? Or was it D, John Denver? The answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of September the 20th. Well, it was on this very day back in 1943 that singer Kate Smith, known as the First Lady of Radio, finished her war bond radio appeal. This contralto was especially known for her rendition of Irving Berlin's God Bless America. She had stayed on the air 13 continuous hours and collected $39 million in bond pledges. 1943 today. And it was 34 years ago today, 1985, that the first Farm Aid concert was held in Champaign, Illinois. The show raised $10 million for U.S. farmers, 1985 today. Now, Farm Aid's annual festival is an all-day celebration of music and family farmers featuring a unique lineup of stars, artists, and genres. The first festival today. Back in 1985. And in country and bluegrass music news, we have this article about what with the annual IBMA festival coming up here in Raleigh and with the importance of banjos to bluegrass music, it's important to know that there is an American Banjo Museum. The American Banjo Museum is a world-class 21,000-square-foot facility honoring the rich history, vibrant spirit, and unlimited future of the banjo. The museum's collection contains more than 400 instruments, recordings, film, video, printed music, instructional materials, and memorabilia associated with the banjo. The museum contains the largest collection in the world of banjos on public display. Galleries include replicas of primitive banjos developed by African slaves, actual minstrel age instruments from mid-19th century, classic era banjos from the late 1800s and early 1900s, post-World War II instruments used in bluegrass, folk, and world music. Much of the museum's core collection is ornately decorated banjos made in America during the jazz age of the 1920s and 30s. Originally located in Guthrie, Oklahoma, the museum was founded as a non-profit organization in 1998 by Midwest City Attorney Brady Hunt and Indiana industrialist Jack Canine under its previous name, the National Four-String Banjo Hall of Fame Museum. Canine, a banjo player and enthusiast, stated his belief that preserving and promoting the history of the banjo, America's adopted native musical instrument, is an important mission for future generations. The museum was originally founded primarily by and for enthusiasts and players of the four-string banjo, the predominant stringed instrument associated with the jazz age of the 20s and 30s, commented American Banjo Museum Executive Director Johnny Byer. In contrast to that beginning, Byer noted that the museum has evolved much like the banjo. As the banjo has evolved for nearly 400 years in the United States, taking on many different forms and styles, the American Banjo Museum has expanded and made a commitment to present every chapter of the banjo's story, from its roots in American slavery to its most recent identities in bluegrass and international folk music. So phone 405-604-2793 or go online to AmericanBanjoMuseum.com to learn more about this fascinating museum dedicated to the banjo. Okay, so here's a classical music question that actually appeared on a test. You ready? An orchestra of 120 players takes 40 minutes to play Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. How long would it take for 60 players to play the symphony? Let P be number of players and T the time playing. Well, this article is a maths teacher accidentally made a music meme that trolled the world. This is written by Kyle McDonald on the 30th of August, 2019, and published in ClassicFM.com. The amazing story behind one of the most widely shared classical music memes and the teacher that taught us all a lesson. Back in 2017, a tweet from a chap named Doug Matakonis shot around the world with 15,000 retweets, bringing laughter to many. The tweet featured an exam question with what appears to be, shall we say, a somewhat fundamental misunderstanding of how Beethoven's music is made. A lot of people enjoyed the ridiculousness of the exam question, poking a little fun at the clearly befuddled teacher who wrote it. But then the teacher got in touch. Gasps. The viral tweet was spotted by the teacher who made the question. Claire Longmore, a maths teacher in Nottingham, replied to Doug's tweet saying she had written the question for her class back in 2007. She then included the whole worksheet and a note, the little line at the top of the paper which said, "Beware, there is one trick question." Well, it looks that Ms. Longmore caught us out, a lot of us. Teachers are indeed wonderful, remarkable, and will always come out on top at the end. Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata provides the background to this follow-up article, then. And as noted in MozartsFootsteps.com on August 2, 2012, Beethoven's Ninth Symphony was remarkable for several reasons. It was longer and more complex than any symphony to date and required a larger orchestra. But the most unique feature of the ninth was that Beethoven, including chorus and vocal soloist in the final movement, he was the first major composer to do that in a symphony. In 1817, the Philharmonic Society of London commissioned Beethoven to write a symphony. The first three movements were for the orchestra alone, but the composer knew he needed to end the work with something special. This is when he recalled Schiller's Ode to Joy poem. A movement based on this famous melody was exactly the ending his new symphony needed. By 1824, Beethoven was almost entirely deaf, but still wanted to be part of the performance and was on stage while the piece was performed to indicate the tempos. Yet Beethoven could not resist helping, quote-unquote, the musicians on stage by showing them the style and dynamics that he wanted. The great composer's actions were animated, to say the least. One musician wrote, "He stood in front of the conductor's stand and threw himself back and forth like a madman. At one moment he stretched to his full height. At the next he crouched down to the floor. He flailed about with his hands and feet as though he wanted to play all the instruments and sing all the chorus parts. It was a good thing that the conductor had already instructed the musicians not to pay attention to the composer." Beethoven's deafness created one of the most touching stories in music. When the symphony was completed, he remained facing the orchestra and could not hear the thunderous applause of the audience for his new symphony. Caroline Unger, the mezzo-soprano soloist, had to tap the deaf composer's arm and have him turn around so that he could see how the crowd's response. Many of those in attendance, including Miss Unger, had tears in their eyes when they realized the extent of Beethoven's deafness. And in jazz and blues music news, we have this article written by Jeffrey Brown, published in PBS.org on June the 14th, 2019, entitled, "With the Juke Joint Festival in Mississippi City Aims to Lose Its Economic Blues." In Mississippi's Clarksdale, the heart of the rural Delta, a celebration of the blues has been drawing thousands of fans to the area for the past 16 years. The Juke Joint Festival, named for bars and informal music venues scattered throughout the African American South, in part as a response to whites-only clubs, has helped revitalize a city whose economy was struggling, Jeffrey Brown reports. A rainy night in Clarksdale, in the heart of the rural Mississippi Delta.
Thirst is all so sad.
At the new Seed and Supply Company, Anthony Bigay Sherrod is holding court. It was just one act in a town-like celebration of the blues that, for 16 years, has been bringing thousands of fans here, rain or shine, each spring. They came from all around the country and all over the world, including a contingent from Australia. This year, the festival featured more than 100 performances. For the kids, there were racing pigs and a monkey riding a dog herding goats. The festival takes its name from juke joints, informal bars, and music venues once scattered throughout the African American South, as an answer in part to whites-only clubs, a rich history now in danger of being lost. Red's Lounge is said to be one of the last true juke joints in Clarksdale, and on a Friday night was packed as Frank Rimmer dazzled on guitar. Clarksdale, site at the famous crossroads of blues history, where Route 61, which runs from New Orleans to Memphis, St. Louis, and beyond, meets Route 49, which runs across Mississippi. And it's where, according to lore, blues legend Robert Johnson sold his soul to the devil to learn the guitar. It's home to the Riverside Hotel on the south side of town, where singer Bessie Smith died after a car accident. And it was once home to legends like Muddy Waters, Sam Cooke, Ike Turner, and many more. Juke Joint Festival co-founder Roger Stoll grew up in Ohio as a fan of the music and moved there in 2002 to open Cat Head, a record store. He says the downtown was dead and live music was struggling to be heard. Today, there are new cafes, restaurants, hotels, and live music across town, including at many new venues like Ground Zero Blues Club, co-owned by actor Morgan Freeman. Economic challenges remain, but cultural tourism has been a major factor in the growth. It may not save the town, obviously on its own, but it's sort of the foundation of what we're doing, at least for downtown revitalization. It's a hope for the music and for the economic benefits it can bring. Fleetwood Mac's Albatross introduces our rock and pop music news. It's entitled The Stories Behind the Songs. Jim Farber, Parade Magazine, August the 11th, 2019. Do you know who Carly Simon was anticipating? Who inspired Dear Prudence? How about the stories behind such classics as Rosanna and Philadelphia Freedom? We put on our Sherlock Holmes hats to figure out the people and stories behind some of pop's biggest hits. So how about Fleetwood Mac's Go Your Own Way? Well, Fleetwood Mac's biggest album, 1977's Rumours, was fueled by anger and jealousy. Some of its most potent songs reflected the breakup of singer-songwriters Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham. In Go Your Own Way, Buckingham lashes out at Nicks, who had dumped him. In the song, he claims that packing up, shacking up's all you want to do. Nicks retaliated with Silver Springs, a gorgeous ballad in which she declares, "I know I could have loved you, but you would not let me." Silver Springs was left off the album, which incensed Nicks. Her song did, however, become the B-side of Go Your Own Way when it was released as a single, which became a top 10 hit. And as noted in songfacts.com, Albatross is from Fleetwood Mac's 1969 album, English Rose, which charted at number one in England. Indeed, this song is the biggest-selling rock instrumental of all time in the UK. An albatross is a bird that sailors believe brought bad luck, hence the expression, an albatross around your neck. The albatross appears in the poem, The Rime of the Ancient Mariner, by Samuel Coleridge. Fleetwood Mac guitarist Peter Green read the poem as a child, which gave him the idea for the song. A Chuck Berry instrumental from 1957 called Deep Feeling has many of the same elements Fleetwood Mac used on this song, Albatross, including a call and answer style of guitar playing and constant bass in the background. Finally, Albatross inspired the Beatles song Sun King on their 1969 Abbey Road album.
Capital City skyline photo. Skyscrapers shine, the sun so low in the sky. The secretaries at the hot dog vendors, cabs honk at the bicycle messengers, rolling by.
And in local music news from this capital city, we have this article entitled Groove in the Garden, the 5th Annual Garden Party at RLT. This is written by Miranda Yvonne Walter Magazine, September 2019. By the way, this event is held from 2 to 8 p.m., costs from $15, at 301 Pogue Street, RaleighLittleTheater.org. Raleigh Little Theater's Groove in the Garden kicks off its fifth year of live and local music on September 21. Eight local bands are set to play in the Rose Garden, opening with alternative indie band Arson Daily and closing the festival with Sarah Shook and the Disarmers' Honky Tonk Sound. RLT Executive Director Charles Faniff says he looks forward to the locally focused event every year. Groove in the Garden is exciting because you get to see a lot of bands from the area who are handpicked by our talented partners at the Poorhouse. Adam Lindstedt, owner of the Poorhouse and founder of Groove in the Garden, says he chooses local bands for the festival that have previously performed at his venue. The music comes from here, and we're proud to showcase and have them represent our state. Spend the day enjoying homegrown music, complete with 35 local vendors, including food trucks like pizza from Pie Pushers and barbecue from Longleaf Swine, plus beer from Winston-Salem's Foothills Brewery. Guests are welcome to bring their own food, but no outside alcohol or glass, please. Activities for kids are available, like hula hoops and an arts and crafts station. There are even treats for your pup. Yes, this is a dog-friendly music festival. The festival has grown since its inception in 2014. The bands are more diverse, Lindstedt says, and now represent a wider genre of music than North Carolina has to offer. The festival is particularly special to Lindstedt as he selects the bands that play. Seeing the bands we've been working with the past few years, from playing shows for five people on a Tuesday evening to growing and developing a larger fan base, is worthwhile, he says. My goal is to get them to where they're too big to play at my venue. And in music research and technology, we have this article entitled Robotics in Pop Culture Music. This is published in IEEE.org on the 12th of August, 2016. IEEE, by the way, stands for Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, and it's the world's largest technical professional organization dedicated to advancing technology for the benefit of humanity. The article continues, however, the music industry has always revolved around creativity and the ability to produce new sounds and ideas. It is becoming increasingly evident that robotics is playing a larger role in our music, as it has in many other aspects of our lives. Well-known artists and bands throughout the years have created music around how new technology is taking over. The Buggles got this direction with their hit Video Killed the Radio Star. Others have taken a more direct approach to acknowledging robotics as a growing source of intrigue, such as Styx in Mr. Roboto. Now, decades after those songs topped the charts, the impact of robotics is larger than it ever has been before. JukeDeck, the 2015 winner of TechCrunch Disrupt's Startup Battlefield in London, is a company that uses complex algorithms to create songs with very little music knowledge needed. The company's artificial intelligence music composition technology only requires users to select the genre, tempo, and length, and the system will create a completely unique song that the user can copyright for an additional fee. The article skips down and ends with this. To complete the trifecta of conceptualizing, recording, and playing music, Robotics has also been leveraged for live performances. Robots in real time includes things like prosthetics to help people drum, robots that can change internal mouth pressure for trumpet players, and even full-size rock bands where every instrument is played by a robotic counterpart. Events like these definitively and definitely raises some questions on just how far we can push robotics into the music industry. So how'd you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, what is the term for a direction to play music lively and fast? Was it adagio? No, adagio is a tempo having slow movement, restful, at ease. Is it legato? No, legato is a word that indicates that the movement or entire composition is to be played smoothly. Is it drone? No, drone means dull, monotonous tone, such as a humming or a buzzing sound. Drone also refers to a bass note held under a melody, so the correct answer, answer B, allegro, is a direction to play music lively and fast. And the answer to our second question, it was on this day back in 1973 that a popular singer was killed in a plane crash on his way to Sherman, Texas, for a concert. Hint, he was known for such songs as Big Bad Leroy Brown, Operator, and Time in a Bottle. So who is that? Was it A, Ronnie Van Zant? No, Van Zant was in the 1977 plane crash that took members of the Lynyrd Skynyrd Band. Was it D, Ricky Nelson? B, I'm sorry. He died in a plane crash in 1985. Was it D, John Denver? Nope. His plane crash was 1997. Correct answer, answer C, Jim Croce. As noted in MendelFoss.com, after finishing up a concert in Louisiana, Croce was flying to Sherman, Texas for his next gig. It was a clear evening and visibility was excellent, but for some reason the pilot didn't get the plane high enough in the air to clear a pecan tree at the end of the runway. Reports speculate that the pilot, who had a history of heart problems, may have had a heart attack. Everyone on board died. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review, and as we leave you, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Music Review, readily available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. Now, if you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me, Randy Thompson at 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.